This is space. This is the final frontier. These are the cases before the court. Its mission: legislate strange new crimes, seek out new perpetrators and new defendants, to jurisprudently go where no law has gone before. This is The People versus Star Trek Voyager.
The People versus Star Trek Voyager is recorded in front of no one.
For the defense,
Commander Matthias Zapp Spurlock, Starfleet Pro Bono Legal Fund.
Prosecution.
Super Sea Lord, Super Admiral of the Grand Superfleet, John Q. Continuum Esquire.
Judge.
The Honorable Midnightian Leader.
May it please the court, case on the docket is 319 Rise. Stardate unknown. Original air date 2/26/97.
Order in the court. As is well known to all here, these proceedings are being broadcast on Babcom, so I expect a civil tone and a consummate air of professionalism. No rancor, no ribaldry, and not even a sniff of the lemongrass. The question before the court is this: is Star Trek Voyager a misunderstood gem, or just plain, tawdry garbage? Now your opening arguments, keep them brief.
Thank you, Your Honor. I will indeed be brief. Here we are again, pilgrims in an unholy land built by the one and only Brannon Braga. Space Jesus help us. Rise is quite honestly a mess at such a level that the only thing messier in existence is Zap Spurlock's love life. That's right, Your Honor. It's that terrible. It's Mari Povich, who's your baby daddy, kind of terrible. Except less fun. It's a tired idea. It's full of a multitude of cliches, full of obvious twists. And to further push this episode into the shit pile, it's poorly directed. Brannon Braga himself has stated, and I quote, "I do have to fault myself for a somewhat flaccid script." Flaccid indeed. Thank you.
Commander Spurlock.
Your Honor, friendship is a powerful thing. But it's not as powerful as contempt. And that's what Rise is all about. It's a story of two workplace acquaintances using contempt and resentment to power themselves to victory over seemingly insurmountable odds. It's a story about the true foundation of the modern workplace, Your Honor. The drive to succeed only so you don't give your annoying co-workers the satisfaction of seeing you fail. TNG and DS9 would have you believe that respect and mutual admiration are pillars of a healthy workplace, but Voyager knows the truth, that all professional accomplishment is motivated purely by spite.
Now the evidence will be presented in the format agreed upon by the Fairfax Addendum to the Kittimer Accords. Audio recordings of three white guys interrupting each other. Play the holocron.
Rise, rise. Will you please rise?
One of us needs to start talking. As soon as he switches over,
I start beep booping, and then it gets you off guard.
And it's our fault because this time we were just sitting here looking at you, waiting for you to do something dumb. Just do your dumb thing.
And
so
there you go.
About the episode.
It happened. You're welcome.
As surely as day follows night.
Rise.
Everybody, rise.
Okay, so begins. Cold open begins with an asteroid hurtling towards a planet. What planet? We don't know.
Things doesn't matter.
Tense.
Green planet.
Tension.
There's tension.
Tension.
There's silence on the bridge.
People staring,
looking at a thing.
Looking at it.
It was definitely different. They haven't done this type of moment before. We see some brow ridge guys,
yes.
And we're like, okay, these must be the guys whose planet it is. Voyager's helping them. Very dramatically, Janeway says, mm-hmm. Fire. They shoot the asteroid. it breaks up, and they're like, wait, it should have been vaporized, but the pieces and big chunks are going all over the place. And they're like, the same thing happened yesterday. And like, oh, Captain, we couldn't get all the pieces. Explosions, explosions, explosions.
These guys, yes. I don't know if those are supposed to be spikes on their neck, on their turkey gobblers there, but they look like little teats. Looks like you could reach up and just milk them with your thumb and forefinger.
Are you saying they have neck tits?
I said teats.
Teats?
Teats is a farm term. You're just working blue.
Which you should never do.
You should never do.
Never do that.
Never do that.
Not on this show.
Not here.
Young man.
Young man. I'm sorry. I thought we were talking about neck boobies. This is my bad. Anyway, neck teats. My. I'm sorry.
Yes.
No. For all of our.
Don't apologize to us. Apologize to the listeners.
That's who I was apologizing to. Okay, I would never apologize to you two. Fuck you guys.
Anyway, so the asteroid breaks apart.
Asteroid breaks apart.
We see a chunk of it hit. What looks to be an unpopulated area.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. That's the end of the cold open. Okay. I'm interested. Meh. I want to know what's going on. Meh. So we come right back to the back to the bridge. They say, okay, the debris impacted on the largest continent, but it was in a deserted area, not heavily populated. And then we learn, like, okay, we begin with the ticking clock. We have 6 hours until the next asteroid, but this time it's going to hit the east coast, I think, of the continent.
A populated area.
There's 5,000 citizens. That's where all the colonies are.
But what I don't understand is, like, they have this much time. Why don't they just take the ship to where it is and just nudge it so that it does not...
That is fair.
I'm just saying.
Like, nudge it with the ship?
Or just blow it up out in space.
You know, before it gets anywhere near the fucking atmosphere. Instead of waiting 6 fucking hours, I have a ship that can go warp speed to these things.
Maybe it's the religious beliefs of the neck teats.
No.
That.
No. Fuck you. No, this is stupid. This whole thing is dumb.
You're coming in hot.
I am. I have feelings.
Well, I appreciate the elegant argument you've prepared by saying fuck you, this thing is shit and it's dumb.
Okay. The elegant argument is that why don't they just go, they clearly have 6 hours to take care of this. Uh-huh. Why don't they just do that to change the trajectory of the asteroids?
When they blew up this one, they just created more deadly projectiles, which still honed in onto the planet.
Well, that's because they were at that point that asteroid was already caught in the planet's gravitational field and therefore is already being pulled towards the planet. If they do that before that happens, then it just goes off in random directions in space.
I guess they would have had more time to track down the fragments.
Yes.
Yeah, okay. We'll lodge that one.
Continue though.
Okay, we'll lodge that one.
Yeah.
But I didn't think of that. Because it was so tense.
It was so tense. That's what they want you to do.
And that is how television works.
Yep.
Sometimes you don't want the audience to think of the obvious solution.
Don't look over
and
there.
I didn't think of that. I'll be very honest. Didn't even occur to me. I was like, oh, this is the premise. We're moving right along. 5,000 citizens. I did have the slight quibble of like, 5,000 citizens. How will we possibly evacuate them in 6 hours? I was like, 6 hours seems like a lot of time.
They should have made that like 500,000.
Yeah. I was like, yeah.
That's
like barely one section in a stadium. That's not a lot of people.
Yeah.
How long does it take to transport? How many transporters do they have?
Well, and it did say they're in colonies, so maybe they're dispersed out over.
Oh, true. Maybe it would take. They're not all in one place. That makes more sense.
Yeah. I mean, 5,000 people out of a city is like an afternoon's work.
Yeah.
Easy enough.
I guess if they're spread out.
But if like spread out across like the Australian outback.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How would you know you got them all? And the accountability alone would be challenging.
I could see that would be a problem.
Okay. So they're like, they've been analyzing. So someone on the planet has been analyzing the debris. They call up and say, these are not what they seem. They're made of artificial material. And they're like, what did he say? And I'm like, he clearly said it was made of artificial materials. Like,
yes. Yes, he did.
Dr. Vatum.
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 And then the ambassador of the... I don't think... Do they ever say the name of this race? I don't...
It's the Niru. Nezu.
Isn't that the evil ones that want to kill him?
No. Nezu is the... No, it's Nezu is the good
guy. Okay, the Nezu.
Yeah.
He's like, well, Captain, like, this is going to be a lot more dangerous now. I don't want you to put your ship in danger. And she's like, in for a penny, in for a pound. And he's like, huh?
Say who now?
You know, I'm a native English speaker, and I still really don't understand that expression. I mean, I know what it means, but if you think about it, it's like, wait.
If I'm in for only a penny...
I could just stay in for a penny. Yeah,
it's easier to get out. I've only lost a penny.
I've only lost a penny. I have to lose the entire pound just because I've wagered the penny.
Here, take this penny.
So I can see. I can see how the Universal Translator had a hard time with that one.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah,
and I had some questions about that later. I think maybe it's a later.
Okay, so question: would the Universal Translator translate that into money, like a currency they would?
Oh, I have no idea.
As far as how
they've never, I don't think they've ever
in for a Grimnock, in for a Glarp.
Exactly. Like,
yeah.
At what level is it?
Does the Universal Translator translate it literally, or does it convert it to an idiom they would recognize?
Yeah, we know from Darmok and Jalad that.
Oh, true.
It just translates straight up. Attempt to try to assign meaning or translate a metaphor into a metaphor.
Oh, that's true.
Language. That's very true. Okay. Yeah. So it would just be a literal translation.
It would just probably translate into currency,
which would probably be under. You would understand what that meant, maybe.
I don't know.
It's just weird.
Maybe they have no concept of.
It's gambling. Still a good moment for Janeway.
Yeah.
Like, not. We're in with you all the way.
They don't have money.
They don't have the concept of money. We're going to send in rescue shuttles. We're going to beam aboard the debris so we can study it ourselves.
Yeah.
Great, good, captain-y stuff. So, now we jump to sick bay. Neelix runs in because he needs things because he's going down with one of the rescue shuttles. I noticed he's wearing a velour catsuit. Very similar to what Kes wore the episode before.
Are you saying he raided her wardrobe?
Yes, but secondary question, are they suggesting this is the non-commissioned, like, they're not in Starfleet, but they are clearly members of the crew. Have they invented a non...
They're like DOD civilians.
You can be
a civilian, but work for the Department of Defense.
Sure.
Or are these, like, trainee outfits that we've just never seen before, or what?
Yeah.
Because they're similar enough that I was like,
When they were training the Maquis back in... Was that season one or early season two?
Yeah, that was the end of season one.
That terrible... We didn't like that episode. But if they're training the Maquis, they weren't in... velour cat suits, as I recall.
Nope.
Would have been a better episode if they had been. I kind of took this to mean that, like, if you're like a Starfleet adjacent civilian, you probably have.
That's what I thought too.
Some discretion within certain guidelines. I mean, you probably can't like walk around in a bikini on the ship or something like that. But
yeah, and it's one of those things that only we would really be interested or concerned about. I was like, could we have some like. Could they just explain how they function within the command structure of the ship? Because it seems like they follow orders just like everybody else. Well, but
yeah, I think at this point, everyone has to follow orders.
Do they have a rank? Like, are they considered ensigns? Like, what?
I don't think that they have a rank. Well, Neelix's case is a little bit more strange because sometimes he moonlights as a security officer, at which point I guess maybe he's an honorary crewman at that time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Kes, I think it more just kind of falls under the, okay, if you're on a ship, if you're booking passage on a ship, even if you're a civilian, you do what the captain says.
Yeah, you do what
the person who's commanding the ship is
so she's been assigned
duties. Everybody.
Yeah.
The captain of the ship is even in charge of people that outrank the captain of the ship when they're on that ship.
When they're on that ship.
Right. So Kes's makes sense. Neelix, his role blurs a lot of lines.
Right.
Because he has so many jobs and because, well, morale officer, that sounds kind of official. And then sometimes he's toting a phaser and like arresting people.
Yeah.
So that's obviously, maybe they just let him do whatever.
I just don't want to have that conversation of telling him no and having him cry.
Or explaining his whole, like where he fits. It's just like, just if Neelix shows up and wants to do something,
just let
it's
him
not
do
immediately
it.
In the way, let him do it.
Well, it seems like they're slowly working with him towards he wants to join Starfleet officially. Like, he wants to, like, there's always been him studying all this stuff. It's been a sort of a slender one, admittedly, but a plot thread.
It has been.
So I'm curious if they're ever going to have the moment like, okay, you are now officially part of Starfleet. Can they do that?
You are now Ensign Neelix.
Yeah, Ensign Neelix. Yeah.
She should be able.
Commission.
She should be. She should be within her rights to give a brevet commission.
Interesting. All this,
especially given the extenuating circumstances of them being however many thousands of light years away from
Starfleet. No one can go to the academy. So
right. Yeah.
Anyway, Velour Catsuit, he's getting some more, he's very concerned about the mission. He's getting extra medical stuff.
Right.
Kes is like, you only see like the back of her head, but she's like, I'll get them for you. And she's just...
I didn't take it. She didn't say it like
but
that.
But if we go with the idea that he's took her Velour Catsuit.
Then
yeah.
Or like yesterday, they bumped into each other in the hallway.
Yeah.
And she was talking about, I can't wait to wear my velour suit tomorrow.
Right.
I love my new velour cat suit. And Neelix is like, uh-huh, I know what'll be cool. I'll wear my, I'll go replicate my own velour cat suit, and then she'll want to date me again. He did that, and she saw it, and then put back on one of her Jedi Consular outfits, and she's pissed about it.
Yeah, it definitely seems though, they're canon. Actually really, I mean, I'm making a joke. There really was
it's a cut scene.
Between them. There's really no interaction between them.
Not.
We've basically entered the point where if you start from this episode, you will never know they dated.
Yeah.
There's no mention of it. Maybe there is later, but right now it's like, nope, not a thing.
Yeah.
Okay.
Which I think lends some degree of credence to the argument that we were making on last week's episode about their relationship was always largely emotional without other types of entanglements.
Mm-hmm.
And so really, I guess in Neelix's mind, he's just had to dial that from like a 7 down to about a 4.
Right.
Like now they're just buddies.
They're buds.
But some of the other things that have to get disentangled when a relationship ends were not a factor to begin
with. No, I'm definitely on the Neelix's ace watch. Like every interaction he has, I'm like, I actually have some notes about it later. But okay.
Okay.
Let's plow ahead. So, anyway, so he has a quick conversation with the doctor. He's like, I need all these medical things. And the doctor's like, I suggest a tranquilizer. Like, calm down. And Neelix is all concerned because he's on Tuvok's team, and Tuvok just doesn't understand him, doesn't have respect for him, even though he thinks Tuvok is great.
Right.
And then they give the doctor a good line about, yes, Tuvok seldom acknowledges my brilliance.
It's a Vulcan thing.
Tough
versus...
nut to crack.
Yeah.
But basically, he gives Neelix some good advice. Just like he will recognize you. Just do your best. Focus on your mission.
Do your job.
Do your job. Okay. So now we jump immediately to they're on the shuttle with Tuvok and one of the aliens from the planet, who his name is Squar. Sklar. I think it's Sklar. Mr. Sklar. Sklar.
Why are we back in the shitty shuttle, by the way?
Because they had to take three down, so one of them had to be a
crappy. Neelix always gets the crappy shuttle.
So are we saying that they've only built one cool shuttle
maybe
so far? That's like Chakotay's. That's like First Officer's yacht. That's why he was in that. Oh, well, I guess they lost that one. Maybe they just had that one, and it got left on the Unity planet.
That's
so,
true.
Yeah, so maybe they're back
Sklar.
To
Sklar.
Yeah.
So anyway, and they're having some turbulence getting through all the interference. They have a very bumping, like they're going to have a bumpy landing. They lose main power. Brace for impact. We get a little bit of what Mr. Sklar is like. Basically, he's sort of a coward. He's a cowardly sort of character, which I was like, are they doing like a weird, like they're trying to, like he's what Neelix was, and now we're seeing Neelix as he is.
I mean, that would have been interesting.
I think that idea was there. Not much comes of it because they never really put those characters in contrast.
Yeah, but let's not just skip by the fact that another shuttle going to a planet crashes.
Mm-hmm.
Again. All right, continue.
They can't beam down.
I know they couldn't beam down, and apparently they can't land a shuttle.
They landed 2 out of 3.
2 out of 3.
66% success rate.
That's pretty damn 0.6 good.
6 repeating.
Hey, man. Yeah. If you were a baseball player and you hit 2 out of 3 times every time you went up to the plate,
that'd be pretty sweet,
you'd
actually.
Be Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
I mean,
if your batting average was 666,
not even.
You'd be in the Hall of Fame and you would usher in the end times.
Yeah.
Not even. I'd read that story.
Not even Dale Murphy hit 0.666.
And if Dale Murphy couldn't do it.
I know, man. Who could?
We're talking about a sports.
I kind of thought with Dr. What's his name in the back of the shuttle?
Sklar.
Sklar, yeah. Sklar. Looking back on it now, maybe that was an effort to make him seem kind of nebbish and ineffectual so that when he ultimately makes the turn,
not
to jump ahead and spoil things, but who cares?
Yeah.
That you're like, oh, we didn't suspect him in the slightest because...
No, I'll give you that because even like when they're trying to shoot stuff down, he's the first person to be like, we should just stop. We should give up.
Yeah.
This isn't going to work.
Yeah. And the astrophysicist guy is the one that seems more like the obvious. He wears a darker colored suit than everybody else.
And he's bald and has a goatee.
Right. His goatee tells me.
Okay, so we jump back to the bridge real quick. They find out they've lost comms with Tuvok's shuttle, but they've beamed up a piece of the debris and they're studying it. Just kind of a quick, like, okay, we'll look for Tuvok's shuttle. We'll come back. So, cut to, on the planet, the shuttle's crashed. Tuvok's head is on the console. And this was very strange. There's someone beating on the hull, like, immediately. And it's Dr. Vadim and another guy, Han Juan.
Yeah, that's right.
Apparently, they were mining gallicite.
Gallicite.
That delicious gallicite. I thought it was a little convenient that they just happened to crash right where the dude they were looking.
I mean, they were going to that place.
That's true.
If you're point, if you're pointed at it, and all your stuff comes crashed off, you're going to continue to go that direction.
Yeah. Well, it was more of a rough landing than a crash. It was a controlled fall.
It was a controlled fall.
But anyway, Dr. Vadim comes on and they're like immediately like, hey, tell us what you wanted to tell us. And he's like, I can't, the data is classified. And they're like, but come on.
I'm working for your ambassador.
Yeah, please. It's important. He's like, nope, only going to tell the ambassador.
Yep.
Which of course makes us suspect him.
Yep.
But anyway, they realize that the engines are destroyed. It'll take several hours to repair. They don't have several hours because an asteroid's going to hit in under six. Mm-hmm. He sends Neelix to go inspect the antenna, and Neelix is immediately like, oh, well, I could also do this, and I could do that, and do this, and he's like, damage report only. Oh, but I could also do this.
The damage report.
The damage report. Neelix, please.
Neelix, please. The damage report.
Then Neelix goes out, sees a big, weird spire thing. I was like, okay.
Go to it.
Go to it. You're called to it. He runs back inside to annoy Tuvok some more. He says, okay, that's a tether that goes up to a space station, apparently. I used to work on magnetic carriages. If we can just get on this thing and repair it, we can get above the ionosphere enough to radio to Voyager. Yeah. Then they'll beam us out.
Yeah.
We'll be saved.
Mm-hmm.
And basically, Neelix is just spinning his web as quickly as he can. It's like, it'll take some creative mechanics, but I've had 2 years on tether mechanics on Rhinax, where I worked before. Mm-hmm. Then they have the big moment where Tuvok weighs all the options, and he's like, no, we're not doing that. And he's like, give me a chance. You won't... And then the other guys are arguing, of course. But finally, he's like, look, we can go and try, and if we can't do it, we'll come right back.
Yeah.
And I will say that a space elevator is not just a dumb thing they came up with.
Like, yeah.
That's based on real theory.
Mm. They really kicked that around in the late 50s. This is a way to get things back and forth to orbit without. Mm-hmm. And you can build it in one of the Civ games.
Yeah.
It actually shows up a lot in sci-fi of the 70s and 80s. Like, it's a really common. Like, and I always love it because it's
gone this way instead of rockets, mm-hmm. you know?
It's cool because it's really like grounded and physical. Like, I always thought that was a neat concept.
It just seemed dumb.
So it seems dumb.
It was worth mentioning that this was that if it is a dumb idea, that's not Voyager's fault.
I was more saying that Neelix's ideas always seem dumb because they're
maybe
Neelix.
Just coming out of Neelix's mouth. It seemed dumb.
But then he says the words in any screenplay where he says, "You won't regret this."
Nope.
And you're like, "Oh no!"
Red flag.
Red flag. So they make it to the base of the tether, and then they find a squatter who immediately jumps on Neelix, holds a big knife to his throat.
Stab him.
He's like, get away or I'll kill him. I don't 100% understand why we added this character in at this point. I like her. I enjoy all her interactions. Did they just need another suspect for the locked room murder mystery we're about to have?
I think so.
Okay. Yeah. Okay.
She really serves no other purpose. I mean, he says something in a minute about, oh, you're good at metallurgy. But I always thought he was kind of saying that just to calm her down and...
Could be.
Doing this morale officer.
I think you need someone who's on Neelix's side.
That makes sense.
She has his back the rest
You need
of the
someone
time.
For Neelix to talk to. Okay, right. That makes sense. Okay. Well, I retract.
As much as I don't want to help.
I retract the complaint, yeah.
She just didn't want to share her food, man.
So they commercial break, they come right back, and she's like, drop your weapon! And you can see every fiber of Tuvok's being wants to shoot through Neelix and kill her.
You gotta go for the good wound, like in Speed.
There's gotta be a pierce target setting on a phaser in case you need to shoot through someone.
Couldn't you just stun both of them?
You could stun both of them, yes.
Hmm. So
he pulls out two phasers, one for each of you.
Star Trek is weird with stunning because sometimes they want to act like it's the safest thing in the world. There's no risk in stunning it. It's kind of like how, unfortunately, some law enforcement are with tasers these days. You want to act like, oh, this is completely harmless. You'll just sleep it off. You know, it's a perfectly acceptable non-lethal alternative to a firearm. But then sometimes it kills people.
Yeah.
You know, if they have a heart condition or something. And with Star Trek, sometimes they just stun willy-nilly, like when Chakotay just freaking shot Torres 2 episodes ago or whenever that was. And then sometimes they try to stun someone and be non-lethal, and they die when the plot wants them to. So it's hard to get, from an audience standpoint, it's hard to get a read on how safe of an alternative stunning actually is.
I would say not very safe.
In this case, I assume they were like, well, yeah, stunning them both would be dangerous because maybe one of them would get a double shock and whatever. So
yeah, also she literally has the knife at his throat.
Yeah.
Like, just a tiny jerk.
She could fall backwards and injure him badly.
Exactly.
So, or her hand could spasm or whatever.
Okay, so it's Neelix who basically de-escalates the situation.
Mm-hmm.
He's like, you know, we're going to use this carriage to get to safety. We know this catastrophe is taking its toll on everyone. And she's immediately jumping to, like, very logical, like, there's not enough air for 6 people and I don't have enough rations. And but then he says, look, we just got to get above the ionosphere and then they'll beam us aboard. And that's when she calms down. And this is when I had a question about the universal translator. In the first season, they kind of make a big deal several times that beaming is a unique technology that only Voyager has. They've showed a couple other random aliens that have had it here and there, but it seems like it's not as pervasive in the Delta Quadrant as it is in the Alpha Quadrant.
Right.
So I was wondering, like, what did that translate to that she understood enough to immediately let go?
Yeah, that's a great question. I mean,
I don't know. Did he specifically say beaming?
He did. He said they'll beam us aboard. Yeah. Like, I wrote it down because
I think that's a mistake.
Maybe just sort of,
because I think any group of any civilization that's like living in colony, like spread out on, and like are using like a tether like this, like they probably don't have.
Or my secondary question is like, or is it common knowledge that Voyager has this technology?
But they're in a new area. They haven't.
News travels fast. Would be my one. I'd throw that in there, but
maybe.
Would they travel fast?
Yeah, because it's assumed that they've been encountering people as they go along, and so
they have a rep, the ship of death.
They are. Yeah, that's true. They do. They drag death behind them. Yeah, I mean, you could also think that. Reasonably, I mean, think about Google Translate, right? The closest thing that we have to a universal translator would maybe take that and translate it into bring us aboard or maybe just teleport. Something that would be kind of a general.
Even though we don't have.
They'll take us aboard, maybe, and she would think.
Like,
that,
even though we don't have the technology today, I know what teleport means.
If somebody came in and said, we're going to teleport you from here to there, you'd know what it
means.
Even though you wouldn't know how the tech would work.
We're doing a little bit of work, but it doesn't bother me.
It didn't bother me really that much in context in the episode.
I mean, I don't even remember.
It just made me think about the fact that that was a huge plot point early in the show that only we. Because when the Kazon stole the beaming technology, it was a big fucking deal.
Yeah.
And now they've kind of had, like, they just aren't as concerned with it anymore. So I thought that was interesting.
Kazon are the most primitive.
Oh, the Kazon.
Kazon.
I miss them.
I don't really.
I don't know either.
The people that they're encountering now are more sophisticated in general than what they were encountering.
Yeah,
I agree.
Yeah. One-off alien. Even these guys are more interesting than the Kazon.
Yeah.
They really are.
Low bar. But yeah, I mean, I think they'd have enough.
Just aesthetically, they're more interesting.
Right. With the neck teats.
The neck teats. Okay, so he talks her down, and he's like, well, it sounds like you know a thing or two about tethers. And she's like, I just worked in the mess hall at the, like, whatever. She was she just basically was a grunt. He's like, you know more than you think. He's very supportive. It's great. Then he says, have faith, Mr. Vulcan. And I'm like, ah, Tuvok must hate that because I hate that.
Step one, stop calling him Mr. Vulcan. If you want him to like you, stop. No, it's awful. And it kind of sounds like you're making fun of his race when you call him that, too.
Yeah.
So
it's racist.
Yeah. Yeah.
A little bit.
I don't think he means it that way. I think it's supposed to be cute.
But I think he's trying to be cute.
It is trying to be cute.
Yeah.
But he's achieving.
There's a lot of trying to be cute. There's a lot of trying to be cute in this episode.
Yeah, there's a lot of trying in general.
Sometimes it makes there. Okay, we cut to just Chakotay hammer, like with a rock hammer, hitting an asteroid. But something about it, he looks so uncomfortable or like, I think he's worried about, I think the actor is worried about breaking the prop.
It looks like,
I just don't.
This is a paper machine.
This is the third one of these we've made.
Extremely aware of the fact that what he's holding is spray-painted styrofoam.
Yeah.
And he doesn't want like the little flecks of it to fly off and be visible on camera.
But it definitely made me remember, like, I really want the all Chakotay motherfucking archaeology episode.
Yeah.
Like, just him getting to, like, do what he knows how to do, do it well, tell me some cool facts about dead cultures. Come on. But anyway, they crack it open, him and B'Elanna, they crack it open, and they're like, oh, tritium, an alloy, weird. And then it pops open perfectly in half.
All that Radio Shack shit stuffed in there.
Yeah. Like,
it just doesn't even make sense. Because presumably the big asteroid had a whole bunch of Radio Shack stuff in it. So when you blew it apart, did it somehow like heal and then new little pockets of Radio Shack stuff form?
No, that's so dumb.
And it makes it look so primitive. They're like, ooh, it's a guidance system. And here we are in the year of our Lord, 2019. You know, the guidance system is like is like half the size of a dime.
Yeah.
You know, and this is like, bloop, 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 bloop. Here's a, I have to have a glass cube and a transistor. And
right.
You know, even for 1990, what, 97, 98, I guess we're 98 at this point. That's really primitive.
Oh, it's still 97. It's still 97. Still 97. Don't get ahead of yourself.
Either way, when we
get to 98, you'll know. Because I'll start reminiscing about high school. It'll be a whole thing.
Right.
It's a small point, but just aesthetically, you know, Voyager on the whole does a pretty consistently good job with coming up with some cool props, cool visuals.
They invented the flash drive, canonically.
Yeah, they did. Yeah, and the double barrel flashlight. This is, which is where I thought you were going when you said flash. I thought you were going to say
it's called a Sims beacon.
Yeah, Sims beacon.
But this is dumb.
It's dumb.
This is dumb.
Yeah.
Admittedly, it gives a little bit of cover to our problem at the beginning of the episode of why didn't they just fly out towards the asteroid and blow it up in space? Like if it's maybe, because it has a guidance system, it can fly erratically.
But they didn't know that.
I know.
Yeah. If they had somehow discovered that, and then they were like, well, it just basically by blowing up the one big missile, we just keep making smaller missiles, and we won't be able to target them all, and they'll get there anyway.
But they still targeted most of them, other than two this time.
Oh, well,
time.
I'm sure the I'm
but they sure would have the more time if they the just population. Went out. Let's fly out and meet them.
Okay. What if they had said, here's how they could have done this better.
Okay.
They could have made this nanotech of some kind that you blow it up, and it blows into four chunks. You target those four chunks, now you've got 16. You target all those, now you've got 32.
I mean,
eventually you can't hit everything.
I mean, that shit would be awesome. That would be a cool episode.
A Hydra asteroid?
Yeah, that would be nice.
Yeah, that would be cool.
And at some point it's like, well, shit, it's too fast. We couldn't get them all. And now we just made a larger dispersal area for...
Well, the question is, why didn't you write this episode, Josh?
Let's see. I was a... freshman in high school.
I would have loved to have read Josh Darnell's freshman in high school episode of Voyager.
There would have been so many boobs.
It would have been called Favorite Son.
So many boobs in it. It wouldn't matter what they titled it.
Not just the neck teats.
Yeah. No.
There'd been teats everywhere. Okay. So back on the planet.
Oh, Lord.
They are working on the elevator.
Yeah.
The main power is back online. They got the cool bypass going. The bypass is holding. They're like, okay, let's get started. And we get a good scene between Neelix and the squatter. We found out her name is Lilius. There's a weird moment where she's like, I don't know how to do this. She's like, oh, you got to recalibrate the pressure valve, which is just turn these knobs.
Turn this knob.
Which
pull
makes
this
me,
thing.
It made me like, pretty intuitive. Just turn the knob.
I'm like, so wait. So every time they've ever said recalibrate on this show, they just meant there's a knob you have to turn?
Yes.
Okay. Then they have a kind of a it's a little future, it's a little dopey.
It's a futuristic looking knob.
That was not a futuristic knob in this. It was literally like from Home Depot. Ace Hardware.
Yeah, it's like the knob on like your hot water heater.
Yeah, it's literally like, oh, well, now the hot water's on. Anyway, they have a cute little scene. It's actually, it's a little dopey, but I think Ethan Phillips' natural charisma lands it. I like when they let him have a long scene where he's not being a joke.
Yeah.
All about like, well, we're going to need a name. Any suggestions? We always name the carriages for good luck. And like, it was like, she's like, oh, I don't know. He's like, oh, I would name it Alexia after my favorite sister. And then they kind of swap stories about she was killed when I was a young man, but she would always take me on these amazing adventures, like to explore all around our home planet. And then he talks about how he still talks to all his whole family's dead except for him. And he shares something. He sees them every night before he goes to sleep. He shares something about his day with them. I'm like, wow, that's actually really poignant. That's a character detail that kind of, once again, they've like really rehabilitated Neelix to a great deal in this season. I'm like, I don't hate Neelix anymore.
It's one of the few, there are a few moments in this episode I don't mind. That's one of them.
Yeah.
I like that they give him a little bit more as far as backstory and just making him interesting and making him an actual, you know, person.
Yeah, and give him like real emotions to grapple with instead of like, I'm jealous. For reasons. I'm mad.
I worried y'all gonna kick me off the ship.
You're gonna do it. You're gonna hit me with that shovel.
She gives him some water, very like pronounced, like, here is water. And I was like, and only later in the episode, I'm like, oh, okay. Yeah. They're doing this is part of the locked room murder mystery section of this episode. So we have a suspicious, like, oh, she gave him some water. She tells him, I have a sister, too. Then Tuvok completely...
Wet blanket Tuvok. Yeah.
Blows up his spot. Is like, your interpersonal activities are delaying our progress. He's like, I'm just trying to cheer everyone up. And she's like, you need to be focused on one thing alone, getting this thing working, getting us out here. And I'm like, damn, Tuvok.
I'm usually team Tuvok, but this was uncalled for. Calling it what it is. That was a dick move even for a Vulcan.
It was a dick move, but, you know, Neelix isn't the morale officer right now.
Yeah,
you are engineer of this tub.
Yeah, but she knows how this thing works. And she's close, like, sort right before. Well, more as much as the rest of
them. As much as anyone on that thing does.
And, you know, before he had this talk with her, she was like, I can't do any of this. She's like, I can't turn the knob.
Yeah.
Neelix had to go over there and calm her down and get her refocused to get her to turn the knob.
You can turn a knob.
If you have functioning hands and wrists, you can turn that knob.
Opposable thumbs. You can do it.
You could use your feet to do it, Tech. Just put one foot on either side. And you know.
I'll go ahead and say, like, what the stuff I really enjoy in this episode is all the stuff between Neelix and Tuvok.
Yeah.
Like, bringing them into conflict, trying to move to a new place in their relationship.
Yeah.
It's a little, all the plot stuff to get them there is super contrived.
It's so clunky. It's clunky.
I like that Voyager, really kind of in season three, I don't know if this is anything that got into so much, maybe a little bit in season two, isn't afraid to show the deep flaws in Vulcan philosophy.
Mm-hmm.
Because a lot of times, even going back to the original series, it was like, I mean, not to say a Vulcan could never be wrong, but it always kind of presented Vulcans in general as more perfect beings. So one thing they're lacking is human intuition. But other than that, it's like, well, this whole idea of having no feelings for anyone and assuming that logic is always the perfect solution in every scenario is deeply flawed.
It is.
And Voyager's gotten into that in season three. And as a consequence, Tuvok has become more interesting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, we've always liked Tuvok. Mm-hmm. Really liked Tim Russ. But he's now a more interesting character. He's not just the guy who walks in and is right about things and then leaves.
I will say that him being a complete just dick is a little forced. Like, they're forcing the conflict.
They are.
They're pushing it. They're nudging it in that direction that it's going to
eventually go. But for me, it works because they have that ticking clock. Like, if we don't get off this planet in the next 3 hours, we will all die.
I mean, I get that. I just don't... I think the rest of the episode is kind of meh. But I agree. I do like the stuff between him and Neelix. Like, for me, it would be more interesting if it was just them. They were on this thing. It was going fine. It was just going slowly.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, at some point, they may run out of air. They may not. They may not make it, you know, that sort of thing. If it's so just sort of the two of them.
Sort of like Dreadnought, but it's just Tuvok and Neelix.
Yeah, I think that would be better. Like, that would at least contain all the decent parts of this episode.
This episode would be better if it was Dreadnought. I would agree
with Dreadnought.
This episode
this Sunday, see Dreadnought rise. Okay, so
Neelix and Tuvok and a sentient missile are all in an elevator going up a tether.
What do you think, sentient missile?
Beep, beep, beep.
Okay, so then they hear they're working on repairs, there's some upsetting noises, and they realize Dr. Vadum is taking the elevator without them. They all start screaming. They're like, everyone's like, stand aside. We get a sick-ass nerve pinch from Tuvok.
Yeah, we don't get nearly enough.
And they're basically realizing, like, we need to go now or we're not going at all. Can we launch? And they're like, everyone get in. The Sklar says, like, I despise enclosed spaces. And this one, I was like, okay, he's like old Neelix. He's Neelix 1.0. Yeah. That's what they're going for. But then the elevator goes up, and then they're climbing. They're like, we're losing maglev cohesion. And this is actually a pretty good scene where Neelix is the only one who knows how to work the machine. And everyone's kind of screaming at him to fix it, mainly Tuvok. And Neelix being really under pressure, and we see all the jokes go away. Like, there's no joking. There's no just like, I'm really trying to do this. This is really hard for me. How can I make this work? And he even like yells back at Tuvok, like, I'm thinking. You have to let me think. But finally, they realize like they're losing the maglev cohesion. To fix that, they need to increase their speed. Like, they need to keep a constant rate of speed for it to work.
Which would make sense.
Yeah, makes sense. He does it. It works. He pats the. He's like, "Good work, Elixia," and then he has to be like, "I named the carriage," and then Tuvok says, "For good luck, no doubt."
He doesn't say it like that, though.
You big idiot.
Yeah.
No, he didn't say it like that.
No, I'm saying you're right.
Yeah. No, I was like, which is weird. I'm like, you were just a fucking dick, like the biggest bag of dicks, like not 4 minutes ago.
Uh-huh.
Well, and then you say something nice.
Yeah, but maybe he's feeling charitable towards Neelix because stepped up and
got, saved his life.
Yeah. Performed under pressure.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, which
was
is
able
fine.
To drop, like Derek was just saying, he dropped the bullshit for a minute and got his job done.
I don't know. I like Tuvok. I like it when they write him correctly.
Oh, well, I guess that's kind of what I was getting to a minute ago. I've always liked Tuvok. I think I like him more now that they let him be imperfect.
I don't want him to be imperfect, but he was just a little out of nowhere.
He genuinely dislikes Neelix.
Oh, yeah.
That's not like a secret friendship under a thin veneer of contempt.
Or is it? Maybe he secretly likes it, but hates that he likes him.
No, I think he just dislikes him.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
It's a tense moment.
Yeah.
Things are all over the place.
No, it's fine. So, anyway.
But one of the oxygen converters ruptured, and then Neelix, oh, well, okay, there's going to be a few glitches. And, we need to activate the containment grid. I'm not quite sure what that is or where is it or how to do it. And Tuvok is like, what are you talking about? You said you've built these and you're super proficient with these. He's like, well, I didn't really work on working carriages, more like prototypes. Actually, scale models.
1/36th scale.
I was like, this is amazing. And Tuvok's response of,
a collector.
You built models.
It's cool, man. I could pilot this Gundam. I've built several.
Yeah,
I was like, this is amazing.
Yeah,
I love so this. Good. I love everything about this.
You fucking con man.
Yep. Nah. That's how he is. He's rogue class.
His instinct is to lie his way to the smoothest possible path through any situation.
I could probably do that.
Little white lies, you know.
All for the greater good.
Yeah, all for the greater good. It's totally fine.
But then we see Lilius dragging Dr. Vadum towards the door because he tried to kill them all and leave them behind. Tuvok puts a stop to it, and he's like, no justification for murder. The big, tall, burly dude, whose name doesn't matter and I don't remember, is like, who put you in command?
Han-Juan?
Han-Juan?
Han-Juan.
And then they give Tuvok a pretty badass moment where he's like, if you're trying to intimidate me, my strength, and the guy swings at him and he just grabs his fist. And
yeah.
Yeah.
Puts the hurt on him.
I will hurt you.
I will need your full cooperation. And then he walks over to Neelix and he's like, mechanical glitches would seem to be the least of our problems. Mm-hmm. So then we go back to the bridge real quick of Voyager. We're like, no sign of Vadim or Tuvok. This is Paris calling in. The asteroid that's coming is huge. It's much bigger than the last one. Time to impact. 2 hours. Then we go back to the elevator. Neelix at the console. First I thought Dr. Vadim was like sobbing into his water bottle. Like, I'm so sad. But then I realized like, oh, they're running out of oxygen.
Air.
Yeah. Tuvok's going around giving them a triox compound to kind of oxygenate their blood.
Triple oxygen, man. It's O3. It's going to be good.
He has a quick interaction with...
Yeah, I mean, if...
Yeah, pure that level of pure oxygen.
If 1-0 is great,
yeah.
3-0 is put it right in my blood.
Way better.
Not at all lethal.
We're not at all, we're not just oxygenating you. We're getting you high on this shit.
He has a quick interaction with Sklar where he's like... He's worried that the hypospray is going to be painful. He's like, no, just here, don't let your anxiety get worse. And then we go back to Tuvok and Neelix talking to each other. And basically they established that like Tuvok's, of course, super Vulcan lungs can respirate in a much thinner atmosphere than everybody else.
Which
he's basically fine.
Vulcans live at elevation. They live in
the
mountainous regions or the inhabitable regions of the planet. So,
Neelix's like, okay, well, I need to teach you how to use this console in case I pass out before we get to where we need to get to.
Yeah.
Then there's a big distraction because Vadim is trying to get out and open the airlock. And he's like, there's something out there. I need it. The roof. And then he dies. And Tuvok leans over him and runs the scanner. And he's like, I believe he was murdered.
Dun, dun, dun.
And I do understand... This is one plot too many for this episode.
Just a few.
But a locked room murder mystery in a space elevator? You know I'm here for it.
Yeah, if you were going to complain about that, I was going to say I never thought I'd see the day
Derek Adams. No,
of course
Adams
he's not.
I'm not, I'm not capable of being upset about that.
But that's my main issue is that, like, this happens, and then, now it's a fucking murder mystery. It's just, nah. It's random.
It's a powder keg of tension. Things get worse and worse and worse. And from it, from this crucible, a new friendship is forged.
Right.
Out of an old friendship that they don't want to talk about, which we'll get to momentarily.
Right.
Okay. So locked room murder mystery in a space elevator. They're like, okay.
A space elevator that at any time could come unmoored and plummet.
Fall.
35,000 feet.
Oh, and if they don't make it to where they need to, they'll be hit by an asteroid and all die.
Or they'll suffocate before that.
Or they'll all suffocate. There's three ways they can die. So they figure out that his water was poisoned, some coolant used in the tether couplings. So basically anybody had access to that.
Yep.
Tuvok, to my great sadness, is like, look, I'll investigate this when we get to where we need to go. Right now we need to focus on survival. Then there's a long shot of Neelix's face and very much that current meme of the lady with all the diagrams and formulas around her face. It's that moment. And I was like, if Neelix spins around right now and is like, I've solved it, I will call the biggest bullshit in the world. But that's not what he does.
I was hoping to be like, please allow me a moment to enter my mind palace.
Yes, go into my mind palace. I'll solve this mystery for you, Tuvok. Mr. Vulcan. But he doesn't. He spins around. He's like, I think we should go up on the roof. And Tuvok is like, are you out of your goddamn mind?
You nimbly bimbly cat, son of a bitch.
And he's like, I've got a funny feeling. And no, I love the way Ethan Phillips delivers that line. Because he's like, this is the thing I could say that Tuvok will have the absolute least
amount of respect for. Yeah.
But this is my truth and I'm going to live it. And he basically starts kind of screaming at Tuvok for a good bit of the rest of the scene, which was a little I was like, I was thrown off initially because like, wait, why? Like, wait a minute. They're oxygen starved. They're freaking out. Okay, it's fine. It's fine. This is kind of out of character for Neelix.
Yeah.
But after all this shit's happened, also he's suffocating.
But you know what? He says some shit that he needed to say.
He said some shit he needed to say.
Yeah. I am tired of your contempt and your sarcasm, and I'm tired of living under your constant hostility.
Yep. Being the target of all your hostility. You're dismissive and condescending.
Tuvok tries to, what, Need? No. And then Lilius is over in the corner like, yeah, you do it.
I saw it.
I've only been on here for like 15 minutes.
That's the only fucking reason that character's in this episode.
Even though I like that actress.
I liked her too. She was fine.
And I really love how Neelix is like, I've tolerated it. I've dealt with all this because I admire you. Like, you are smarter than me. You are stronger than me. But there's one thing you lack, and that's the ability to understand other people's emotions and other people, how you don't understand people. And I think he goes plays his hand a little too far. Like, I'm the only one who can pilot this vessel. And I'm like, it's a space elevator.
It's
literally a throttle.
It's a throttle. Yeah. That's it. Mm-hmm. You go fast or slow. There's literally nothing else here.
Well, they're having to think about like keeping the magnetic cohesion ratio at the correct point. I mean, they did throw some things out there earlier to make it seem it's obviously a little bit more.
Yeah,
it's not literally just a straight up elevator.
And this is where like this whole section is great. This is the moment of conflict of these two characters. Like, we've had this problem. This situation has brought this into focus.
Right.
But this was the moment to be like, remember when we shared a body for a few weeks?
Yep.
Do you remember?
Ever since the whole Tuvix thing, when we were inside each other's minds, fused into a single being.
Do you remember that?
Till the captain killed that guy.
Till we were murdered.
Back. Yeah.
Because it drives me batty that they don't bring that up. Because it makes total sense that after that experience, Tuvok would double down on all of his hostility and disrespect for Neelix because he needs to separate himself from that emotional experience as much as he can, right?
Sure.
Like, it would make this moment stronger having that be part of it, but we can't bring it up. So it's just kind of like we as an audience remember it and know that it was a thing, but it's not canonically mentioned in this moment where it would clearly be a thing to bring up.
Okay, right. So a couple of possibilities here. One is that they're trying to give Tuvix a threshold treatment, which is it's a weird and divisive episode. Well, I guess the threshold's not that divisive. But that 50-50 split.
Where all those threshold stands?
Yeah.
Whatever, man.
And maybe it's just what happens in that episode is so weird and out there that it's a little bit disruptive to more normal strands of the narrative to bring it back up. Or maybe that's in Tuvok and Neelix's mind, but it's such an odd thing to have happened. They don't want to bring it up in a room full of other people. They'd be like, wait, what the fuck happened to y'all? I'm sorry, back up.
Hold up.
Back
question.
Up.
Question. Yeah.
Y'all were, so you were fused into one being, which your captain subsequently murdered so that the two of you could be reborn via transporter. Okay. I'm just going to jump out the door over here. I don't want to be on this elevator anymore. So those are two. One of those is kind of a meta-narrative reason, and then one is an actual sort of in-story reason, I guess.
Yeah, and it doesn't ruin the moment by any... Like, I'm not saying it ruins the moment. It just bugs me. It's like, but it's a thing.
When Janeway and Paris get into arguments about things, they're not like, look, I know secretly this is about the time that we were salamanders and we had babies together.
Yeah, we all know.
Because that could come up in every single conversation they ever had. If you let it come up once, then why don't they just bring it up all the time, every time they get into an argument?
Yeah, that we kind of have to, like, assume off camera at some point. Yeah. Those characters had a day with, like, okay, we're going to talk about this one time, and then we're never talking about it again.
But the Tuvix thing would be similarly traumatic for Tuvok and Neelix. I mean, maybe it's too much to assume that they ever discussed it and just said, that's it, it's done, it's behind us, and we never talk about it again. But I don't know.
Yeah, I could totally see like a sequence of events where Neelix starts like preparing food that is better suited to Tuvok's taste all of a sudden. Like, well, I was you for a little while, so now I know that you like all this stuff, and Tuvok just refuses to eat it.
It is best if we never ever bring that up again.
Right. Okay, so anyway, so Neelix makes his power play like, I'm the only one that knows how to pilot this thing, so we're doing it. He stops the elevator, and Tuvok's like, well, looks like I don't have a choice now, which he kind of does, but he goes along with it. He says, I was like, very well, I'll go on the roof. And Neelix's like, no, I'll do it. He's like, nope, we all know I'm the best person to go. I have the ability to breathe out there. And then he says he climbs up the ladder to go on the roof, and they're like, well, what do you even know what you're looking for? He's like, I'm looking for Neelix's instinct. Perhaps it will be marked.
Yeah, that's a good sassy line.
Good line, good line, Tim Russ.
And then they give Neelix one more line at the end of the scene of, I really like him. I just wish the feeling was mutual.
Yeah.
And they're like, aw. So then we jump to Tuvok climbing out on the Cloud City set from Empire Strikes mm-hmm. Back. He finds a little drawer. He pulls it off. There's a little tiny data pad.
Tim Russ doing really, really good. I'm walking in the wind from your college acting class. Now pretend you're in the wind. Pretend the wind is getting stronger.
It's such a strong wind.
Oh, yes. then Sklar, as the hidden villain.
He was so hidden.
He starts climbing up the stairs like, what are you doing? And then he like does a thing. He climbs out and he tosses Tuvok off the side. And then they have the great shot of Tuvok hanging off the side of the elevator. Leia.
Yeah.
Hear me.
Leia. Neelix.
Sklar comes back inside. And of course, Neelix is like, where's Tuvok? And he's like, get this carriage moving. He has a gun. Get it moving. Get it moving. And he pushes. How does Neelix get hurt? Like he throws him down, right?
Yeah.
Because he gets a concussion. Okay. So then we jump back to Voyager very quickly, where the asteroid is within range. It's on screen. But then they've realized by now that the asteroids are bullshit. It's this group called the Natanian Order, who is basically trying to destroy the colony so they can claim the planet for their mm-hmm, own. Mm-hmm. And they come on the thing. They're like, who are you? She's like, we're here to deal with whoever, the neck teeth guys. And she's like, I'm a friend of theirs. And she's like,
Nezu.
The Nezu. And then they give Janeway a nice ice-cold battle stations line.
Yep.
And they get to work. So now we jump back to the elevator where Sklar is yelling at Lilius to get the elevator working. And she's like, I don't know how. We see Tuvok creeping at the window, but he's too weak to get back in through there. Neelix opens up the door with his fading breath. They get in a big fight. The data pad goes flying, but they never show where it lands. So I was literally like, did it just fly out the window? They have it later, so somebody caught it, but
it's fine.
But then
it's like Mjolnir. It returns to your hand.
That's right. Magical data pad.
They get in a quick fist fight with Sklar, and then they've had some pretty good effects work in this season. So I hate to point out that CGI of him, of Sklar falling out the back is fucking terrible.
Yeah, it's pretty bad.
it's like real person, a paper mache person.
I think they're like going through this sequentially. They used all their effects budget on some of those exterior shots and like the back, like the Bespin Cloud City shot, shots of the elevator. Those all looked pretty good. You know, the asteroid looked okay because you have this, and then in just a minute when they figure out how to modulate around the shields of the people that Voyager is fighting with. Mm-hmm. They're like, fire phasers. And it's definitely one of those, like, you see the button pressed, you hear the sound effect, but they don't show anything hitting the ship.
Uh-uh.
And then Chakotay describes what the phaser blast did because we're out of money. We can't show it to you.
Yeah.
Yep.
Well, I feel like they, from this background stuff, it seems like they only ever give them like a couple of days to do any of that stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's like, what did you get done? Okay, that's what's in there.
That's what's in there.
Everything else, you're just going to have an actor describe it.
Yeah.
So they throw him off. I do like that Tuvok checks on Neelix, and it's actually very tender. It's weirdly tender. Like, he like puts his hand on his face and like checks on him. He's like, thank you, Mr. Neelix. And they realize that the data pad has info about the alien warship, which Voyager's dealing with right now. Neelix has a concussion, and like, okay, we got to get the elevator moving. Lilius, once again, is like, I don't know how to do this. And then he goes, then showing the moment of growth, the moment of learning, Tuvok goes to Neelix, like, we need you. We need you to get up and do this. He's like, I can't. I can barely breathe. He's like, do it for Alexia. And I'm like, all right.
He doesn't believe what he's saying, but he's...
But he understands...
He understands what that it'll work.
He understands what it means to the person he's talking to.
Exactly.
And he's attempting to engage with the whole concept of emotional motivation.
Yes. Yes.
Which earlier in this episode, he would not have done. He would have been like, it is illogical for you to lay here and die. You have a duty.
I love Neelix, like, concussion shambling over to the console, like, I'm glad to see your interpersonal skills are improving.
Shut up, Neelix.
Okay. It's just silly. It's like, Tuvok, you're really strong. Just pick him up and...
Just help him, just man.
Put him over there.
He's got to do it himself.
All he has to do is sit down.
He's got to prove he can do it himself.
Lever. Press the lever up.
Only he can do it. Okay, so real quick, they jump back to Voyager. They're like, oh, the ship is within range. Return fire.
Nothing.
Then on the elevator, they break through the ionosphere. They're like, we did it. Neelix hugs Lilius. Then Lawajuan hugs Tuvok. And it's hilarious.
Is that Hakeem Olajuwon?
Yeah. This is good.
But that Hall of Famer for the Houston Rockets.
That's right.
That moment of that dude hugging Tuvok is so funny. Yeah. I don't care. It feels like something they thought of on set.
Yeah.
Like, because he'd been, the whole rest of the episode, he's like, who put you in charge? I don't like you. Then he's like,
You can see it in his eyes. Like, his inner monologue is going, ah!
It honestly feels like they surprised Tim Russ.
They did. Yeah.
Like, they didn't tell him.
They did.
Like, no, just hug him.
The director's like, just hug him. It'll be hilarious. We'll keep the cameras rolling.
Because Tim Russ won't break. He'll stay in the scene.
No.
It'll totally be amazing. Okay. Then they're... They're like, okay, and then they get beamed over to Voyager. They run onto the bridge. Like, okay, we got all the data pad. We got their shield modularity number, their Pokedex number, whatever. Adjust our phasers to match. Target the primary director. Direct hit. Trust me on that.
Trust me.
We're not going to show you.
I know a direct hit when I see one. I am...
They show
not that
they don't
shot.
Show that
they
one.
Show it when they shoot the weapon system.
You're right,
just but like
right.
Direct hit, and then it doesn't cut away. And I'm like, trust me.
Well, I love that. Like, they go ahead and like immediately it's like, we'll beam you aboard, like with and now we're on the bridge.
Yeah, they run to the bridge.
You can just see the places they were cutting corners.
Yeah,
here, like, on the home stretch.
Get it done, get it done.
Then they're like, okay, the retreating captain, and then they turn to Tuvok, and Neelix's like, what happened to you down there? Oh, blah, blah, blah. And then the ambassador's like, where's Mr. Sklar? And then they make a good joke of he's returned.
He returned to the
surface.
Which is the joke you made earlier about what happened to Tuvok.
Yeah.
Right.
Nice. Then we jump to the final scene, and they skipped the staff meeting. It's just after a staff meeting.
Just garbage.
Don't hold back the staff meeting content. Thank you. Anyway, so that they basically explain the evil aliens, their whole plot is they fake natural disasters to provoke evacuation.
And then they swoop
it. Like squatters. Squatters rats. We found an empty
damn
planet.
Carpet-bagging aliens. We've been here forever. I don't know what you're talking about.
My house is right over there. I
just found
that.
An empty planet. Figured you didn't want it anymore.
I mean, maybe you shouldn't leave. Maybe you should have left a note or something. Yeah. I don't know.
This episode falls in contrast to which one is it's the terrible one where Neelix and his friend from the past are rogues. We've already shat it out of our brains because it was not worth keeping. Where it's all about Neelix is a hero, and like this one feels earned. This was like, no, Neelix did hard things, overcame challenges, and he's the hero of this.
Because last time
Neelix just did
crime on Fair Trade and somehow became the hero at the end.
And
like he did the bare minimum to undo a mess that he had made.
He did then, crime and he lied and like was super shady.
But
as
this one is actually Neelix stepping up to bat and getting it done.
Yeah, exactly.
And still being true to himself.
Yeah.
But showing that he can be who he is and still can contribute.
Right.
But anyway, so Lilia says, well, the damage to our world could have been much worse without you and your crew. Thank you. She puts her hand on his hand. Neelix looks kind of mild about it.
Mm-hmm.
And then she even kisses him on the cheek before she leaves. And he's just kind of like,
yeah.
He's not like, oh,
he's not ready.
Kissy.
Not ready. Oh, either he's not ready because he's still upset about Kes, or he's ace. I'm
telling you.
Let me have this.
I don't want
to. What's scary to me, I was talking to somebody. What's scary to me is I don't know what's in the future of this.
I do.
There's probably an episode that's just him being gross as hell with like, there is a favorite son of Neelix of him just being the grossest.
Getting groped and I will the entire time.
I will eat these words. But right now, I really love this interpretation.
Sure.
And it makes me like Neelix better.
Okay.
So I'm going to hold on to it.
Hold on to it.
It makes a lot of Neelix makes sense.
Hold on to it for now, if that's what you want to do.
Okay. So anyway, but also because everything must be super happy, her sister has been found.
Yay!
The sister that she she thought was dead. We didn't find Neelix's sister, though. That would have been a stretch.
That would have been...
Alexia!
What are you doing? You named an elevator after me? How dare you?
Then the final bit is Tuvok and Neelix. He's like, I've submitted my mission report. I gave you a special commendation. And then they get into...
God, very honored.
They get into a little back and forth about, you know, you'll learn that logic is primary above all else, and, well, your attempts have yet to succeed. Then they get into the cute, like, well, I know you just fine that you always want to have the last word. No, I don't.
Yeah, it's cute.
See what I mean?
It's cute.
It's fucking cute.
Yeah.
It is, and I don't mind any of the, I generally don't mind any of the Neelix Tuvok stuff. I just think every other aspect of this episode is, it sucks.
But they're like the 65% core at the heart of this episode.
I think you're giving them
the beating heart
a higher percentage than I would. That's still an F.
Well,
I'm saying that, like, the interactions between Neelix and Tuvok being in the same room doing stuff together and in each other's orbit is the bulk of this episode. Are you saying you really hate the scenes where they cut back to Voyager? That's what you're saying.
No, I hate everything else. Like the small percentage that's just them two talking is fine. But everything else
that's
is.
That's a lot of the episode.
That's a lot of the episode.
I think it's not that much. It's a little bit. I think you're blinding. You're letting it blind you. This I'm not saying it's that the stuff between the two of them is bad. It's not.
Out your scope, man.
It's good, but like the setting for all of it is not good.
We're kind of already at final thoughts, but we're already kind of in it. So let's just get into it. I will agree that a good deal of the episode is functional at best.
It's super clunky.
It's uninspired. So there's nothing to it.
Well, it's a complete. It is a ripoff. It is, in fact, the Flight of the Phoenix, just with, instead of an airplane, building an airplane, they're building and they're fixing an elevator. Mm-hmm. Even in that movie, the guy was he built model airplanes, so it's down to that, even that.
Oh, I've never seen Flight of the Phoenix.
It's the same. They're stranded, plane crash.
No, I'm aware of it.
But yeah. The guy's like, let's just rebuild a plane. I can do it. And then you find out he
builds. Why do you hate Flight of the Phoenix so much?
It was a kind of a box office flop back in 65. Anyway.
Why do you hate Flight of the Navigator so much?
That's you hate Flight question. Of the Navigator?
I do Flight not hate Navigator. Flight of... You take that back. No. That is slander.
You're checking out now in front of the microphone, but just before we started recording today.
Yeah, he was dogging Flight of the Navigator, you guys.
I love that movie. How dare you? That is offensive. Anyway, I
understand what you're saying.
I think it has good moments. Mm-hmm. Like it's just done so. There's no finesse, like in any of it, really. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. It's not super well directed. I don't think the writing is great. Even though I do like the Neelix and Tuvok stuff, and I like the idea of them growing as characters and, you know, doing more with that relationship because it is interesting. But just everything else.
I think the dialogue writing in this episode is actually really good for the most part. I think it's probably a cut above the average Voyager episode. Storyline-wise, yeah, I mean, maybe you want to argue that it's 10 pounds of shit in a 5-pound bag. Like, there may be one, maybe the making the turn into a murder mystery after you've already made it a survival story, after you've already made it a space adventure, you know, that may be too much for
us. We can't all be pitch black.
Yeah, exactly. So maybe in doing that, no one of those sections gets as much attention from the writers as it could have in terms of atmospheric development and the creation of tension.
Yeah.
That being said, the point of this episode is to do like what you're saying with Flight of the Phoenix, take two characters, put them in tense survival, we have to do this to survive kind of scenario.
Sure.
Now, granted, I've never seen Flight of the Phoenix, but from what you're saying, that sounds like that's what happens. Yep. And then let them learn about each other and let their relationship grow from that. If we're going to run around calling everything that's ever used that convention a ripoff, then it goes a lot further than this episode in Flight of the Phoenix, first of all. I mean, that's
I agree.
That this goes all the way to the top.
All the way to the top. That is a trope across media. So, I mean, I
agree.
I'm not going to hit him hard for that. That being said, I think the point of this was to have a good Tuvok Neelix episode to let their relationship progress in a way that we don't have to keep coming back around to how much Tuvok hates Neelix and like Tim Rusk having to roll his eyes at the ceiling every time Neelix says something. I think it accomplishes that. I think it does it with charm, and I think that central goal is reached effectively, even if some of the other trappings of the episode are not particularly exciting or as exciting as they could have been. So,
no, I hear what you're saying. But for me, like because this is definitely kind of a middle of the road episode where it's got clear problems in one aspect, but stuff we really like in another aspect.
I know, and I get that, but I feel like the difference between this and an episode that we actually think is good, like I know we're stuck in the binary, but like I feel like the bar should be higher.
Well, the thing is, like I said, I compared it mostly to Fairtrade. Like I was like, okay, like if I'm comparing this to Fairtrade, it's definitely better than that, which is very similar in that it's super tropey. You could have written these situations in your sleep.
Yeah.
They're stolen. I mean, stolen's the wrong word. Like there are no new stories.
There are no new stories. There's only so many absolutely. Stories.
Yeah. Ripoff feels like a like strong language.
I agree.
This episode.
It's more.
It's a homage.
Yeah. When you get stuff like this, that's not. It's not trying. Not even pretending to innovate on a plot aspect.
Yeah.
Like it's more about what do I get out of that investment of being willing to accept the trope. I mean, ultimately, that's most genre fiction.
No,
What do I get if I pay my dues of, okay, yeah, you do this thing and then this thing.
I get it. Yeah, you're doing the elevator.
And for me, getting that interaction and the exploration of the relationship between Tuvok and Neelix is worthwhile enough for me to consider it to be a good episode. Admittedly, I would have liked there to be more... I would like them to have talked about Tuvix. That's, I think, a flaw. But that's just me.
Sure.
But also, that damn hug. That damn hug. It's just and that fucking scene at the end. It's so goddamn cute. It's so goddamn cute. So I know you feel strongly about this.
Well, I just... I don't know. I do agree. I like the stuff with Neelix and Tuvok. But I feel like the rest of the episode... should have been better, and it's not. And, you know, and giving it a pass, which I feel like we're doing.
No.
I don't think we're giving it.
No one's giving it a pass.
I think we're giving it a pass. You're giving it a pass because you like what they did.
You're saying you liked the stuff with Neelix and Tuvok.
I do, but
which is the bulk of the episode.
But there's more to it than that.
So I feel like what you're saying is in order for an episode to be good, it has to be near perfect.
No,
which I understand the advantage that puts you at in this little enterprise that we're carrying out right now.
I just feel like the bar needs to go up more. Like, I feel like this is an okay.
That's definitely something we could explore.
I think this is an okay.
Oh, well, in that case, I think the bar should go down.
Yeah.
I mean, of course you think the bar should go up.
No, I just think there are better episodes this season that we've called good. And I just think this is not as good as them. Even though we get something out of it.
I understand what you're saying. But it's like I said, it's the trouble with the binary.
I know.
Like, for you, this is 30%. Like, it's way in the bad. Like, and for me, it's like 60%. Like, it's well enough into good for me to call it good, purely off the interactions between the characters and the good scenes between those characters. Like, I'm willing to forgive a lot of bullshit if I get good interactions between characters and something that feels meaningful between those two characters. Like, as compared to, like I said, I compare it mainly to, like, Fairtrade, which was a lot of bullshit. But we got nothing meaningful out of any of
that. What was the payoff at the end of Fairtrade, exactly?
Yeah. Which ultimately that is kind of a flaw inherent in using a binary.
Sure. Like,
but that's why we have a long-ass podcast that you can listen to and get the full nuance.
Right.
I think it's good.
Okay.
I'm tired of your contempt and your sarcasm. Living under your hostility. This episode is our own personal rise.
It's really just a Viagra commercial.
That would explain a lot,
wouldn't it?
The good citizens of the jury have reviewed the evidence. Gentlemen, your closing arguments.
Thank you, Your Honor. Rise is indeed garbage. It's a collection of obvious things that happened. None of those things are particularly well written or well connected or well executed. The writing is awful. The direction is awful. Neelix didn't even die. And we were so damn close. I'm not mad, Your Honor. I'm just disappointed. No, wait. I'm both. I'm definitely both. Thank you.
Commander Spurlock.
Your Honor, it's not hyperbole to say that Rise reaches levels of suspense that would make Hitchcock glow with admiration. The Hitchcock I refer to is, of course, Filbert Hitchcock, the only man to ever be diagnosed with a rare syndrome that makes you admire everything. Tuvok and Neelix's tense and deadly ascent into the ionosphere may not be particularly tense or deadly, but it does advance the relationship of two key characters and further the rehabilitation of Neelix from forgettable clown perv to meaningful member of the crew.
Ultimately, the fate of this voyage is up to you good beings on the jury, but it is my august responsibility to make judgment based on the evidence and argument placed before the court today. After reviewing it all, I hereby decree that Case 319, Rise, is good. These verdicts cannot be appealed. They are final and irrevocable within this quadrant, space-time continuum, and county. Court adjourned.
The People vs. Star Trek Voyager is recorded in front of no one. Space Judge Midnighty and Later is played by Derek Adams. The Prosecution, Super Sea Lord, Super Admiral of the Grand Super Fleet, John Q. Continuum, Esquire, is played by Jonathan Sparks. The Defense, Commander Matthias Zap Spurlock, is played by Josh Darnell. All episodes of Star Trek Voyager are presumed good until proven garbage.
Radio presentation. For more excruciating action, please subscribe on iTunes or wherever you seek podcast content.